My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the Duck Feed show about the Vince Gilligan universe of shows, including Breaking Bad, El Camino, and Better Call Saul.
And this week, we're talking about the Better Call Saul episode Hero, which was written by Jennifer Hutcheson, directed by Colin Buxey, and it originally aired on February the 23rd of 2015.
Yeah, not tons happen. Not a whole lot of things happen in this episode. Like, this is a good getting accustomed to the pace of especially season one Better Call Saul. Like, I like everything that's here.
Mm-hmm.
We, little peek behind the curtains, we moved the schedule around. We were going to record this a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched this a couple weeks ago, and then we ended up moving it. So I watched it again today to refresh my memory. And I was surprised again by how little happens. And we're kind of in that zone. The next episode is similar in that respect. Mm-hmm. Like, lots of good, funny bits.
Yeah.
Lots of, like, interest. It's just the macro plot's still moving at a glacial pace.
Yeah, it's not till you get to 5-0 that the show starts feeling more like itself, I think.
Yeah. In part because I feel like the Mike, the storylines that are not Jimmy, like, I love Jimmy's storyline in this, don't get me wrong. It's the one that takes place over the longest period of time.
Mm-hmm.
There. Once you start getting to the other characters, like your Nacho story and Mike's story and ultimately Gus's stuff, moves a little quicker. There's some urgency to it.
Structure to it too.
Yeah, a little bit more urgency and structure because we know where it ends. There's a sense of danger to it and stuff. We're just kind of in low stakes.
Yeah.
You know, for a while. Still great stuff. Like, you know, really, really cool bits. The end of this episode and the beginning of the next one, all of the stuff with Chuck, I think is really excellent.
Yeah.
Really, really good stuff in this. But there is a lot of, like, setting stuff up that happens.
Yeah. This is also kind of bifurcated, too. You get a little bit of the problem that you had with the second episode. A little bit. Yeah. With Miho, where, like, we spend the first third of this dealing with the aftermath of finding the Kettlemans up in the mountains. And then the rest of it is about a good old-fashioned scheme.
We get scams and flams.
Yeah.
And I love scams and flams.
It's one of the signature delights of this show.
It's so... When I know people do scams like this. They do schemes and scams in real life. From the outside, they always just look like they won't work to me. And they rely on so many coincidences to it. But I don't give a shit because it's so fun to watch.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it is like one of my favorite things. This is the beginning of my favorite trick that Better Call Saul does, which is weaponize our love of scams and flams against us.
Yes.
You know, is we enjoy scams and flams. The scams and flams keep coming. Mm-hmm. We get the ultimate scam and flam, then feel real bad about it, and then get the scam and flam that it ultimately ends up bringing, you know, when in Monochromaha, bringing down Jimmy. We get this denouement of the scam and flam. You cannot live by the scam nor the flam. And the show weaponizes that against us in a way that I think is beautiful.
Yeah. The scale of both the scams and flams escalates pretty gradually, and they're present throughout, you know, throughout the entire series. You get a few good ones each season. I adore that they weaponize that against you, because as those stakes go up, you start spending a little bit more time with the victims on them.
Yes.
You know,
until,
like, here,
ultimately,
here you've got Howard, and it's very difficult to feel sympathy for Howard based on what we
Howard's
know about
not a
him
victim
now.
In this. Yeah, like this is literally a victimless scam flam.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about this at all.
He's a target, let's say.
Yeah.
He is affected in it.
Yeah. That's on him. One of the other things is in this next episode, we're going to start getting more villain turn Chuck stuff. Mm-hmm. And another thing I really like about season one of the show is the kind of misdirect about Howard or Chuck being the villain.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, watching it this time, it is so obvious that Chuck fucking sucks.
Yeah.
It wasn't as obvious at my first watch through. That could be because I'm a Bluntstone, but, like, on the first watch through, I was like, yeah, this fucking Howard Hamlin guy. This guy sucks. And he's going to do more shitty things later to make you dislike him. But Chuck, like, fucking Chuck.
Oh, my God. feed this guy.
Feed the sneed.
Yeah. Yeah. So, God, nothing stuck out more in the rewatch, you know, for the first half, but just like how petty Chuck is.
The worst.
Yeah. Something else about the way that the show handles this, the schemes is that, they never tell you what the goal is at the beginning of them. You know, like,
yeah,
you just kind of see some parts in motion and it is up to you to assemble them before you see it executed.
You get kind of scammed and flammed yourself.
Yes.
You know, a little bit. And the, I like how, some of them, his classic scams and flams before he levels up are ones you could be familiar with because they are classic scams.
Yes.
And then classic flams.
Mm hmm.
Yeah. Not a whole lot of production detail in this episode. You know, late in the episode, we get a really important moment, which we'll talk about. We do get introduced to the New Mexico University AV club teens.
Yep.
Gwen pointed this out to me. I knew I had seen the main AV club team before. Uh-huh. This is Liz Lemon's child lawyer or child agent.
He from is. 30 Rock. He is, isn't he? Yeah.
And does a great job. These guys suck. Right. In a very affectionate way. I love, as the series goes on, Jimmy gaining this like murderer's row of shitheads to do things. Yep. Even the guy who helps him with the ultimate big scam flam at the end was a guy he defended as a public defender in one of the previous episodes.
He's assembling this coterie of like tappable resources.
Shitty right? Avengers. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah. What I like about the shitty AV teens is these are real people. Mm-hmm. I went to what was basically like a film, you know, television school degree kind of thing, like actual kind of person you're going to run into. But also like I call them the shitty AV teens. Only one of them really sucks. Yeah. They are just broadly ineffectual though. And like, yeah. A thing that is never outright stated, but like the thing that Saul is known for, the commercials, like he probably tapped them for every single one of them, including the one that brings him down.
Yeah. And he takes a lot of hands-on stuff in this, you know, as the teens, he needs the equipment and stuff like that. He's ultimately responsible, you know, for this stuff. The teens, and part of that is because the teens do a thing that I really like, which is when somebody who shouldn't be invested isn't. Like the expectation that somebody, you know, there's this weird like, oh, they did a bad job or they're kind of fucking around. They're college students getting $100 for just split three ways for an hour of their time.
Right.
Like we're not talking about loyalty.
No. Here.
And they're that way continuously throughout the entire series. Like they don't give a shit about Jimmy, you know, and why would they? Like, I love it when a teenager or like a low level worker does not give a shit.
Yeah.
We're going to see this with the copy guy as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like the exact amount of loyalty that like a stranger doing something, like you're not a plot element, you're a character in this world. Yeah. It feels really well realized when characters act like that to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Acting consummate with the reward.
Yeah. And their station, you know, their level of investment is correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a long cold open. Here we're introducing an important character. We're in Cicero, you know, we're in Chicago. Young Jimmy and a drunk guy leave the bar at 2 a.m. talking about how there's nothing to do in this town after 2 a.m. you know. Subtly he's showing this guy's from out of town. You know, and Jimmy's, you know, talking to him saying you should howl like a wolf when you pop your cork, you know, when you come. This thing, and they're kind of just shooting the shit with each other, like one single serving bar friend. You know,
It's like it goes without saying, you don't do it in your ear.
You know, it's just this primal thing. He's like, hey, I know this after party, and Jimmy leads him through this alley. You know, and this is the first time he says he's Saul Goodman. You know, I didn't get your name. Saul, what? Saul Goodman. You know, and they enter into the scheme. They pass a wallet on the ground. There's like $1,000 in the wallet.
Yeah. Loaded with cash.
Yep. And they see a guy passed out, you know, looks like he might be dead, but he's not. They poke him with a stick and he's awake, and this is his friend playing a part. He is dressed to the nines. you know, dressed mm-hmm. very wealthy, has $1,000 in his wallet. They need for the scam to work. This person cannot be sympathetic.
Right. He needs to be, he needs to be a, like a big fat asshole. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and he starts, you know, flipping them off, calling them buttholes. He's got a roundhouse kick them, get up, go into the McDonald's where they work and buy and sell the place. Drop your mop. Get out of here. Buttholes.
Yeah. You know? You know, and he's humming Smoke on the Water this entire time. This is going to become like a leitmotif, the yes. guitar riff there are two things that carry the spirit of Marco, yes. which is this guy's name. It is the riff for Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple, and it is the haunted ring, the haunted yes. ring that turns you into Saul Goodman.
Yeah. The cursed object. This is an aside. I was saving this for an epic suffering, but I just want it. It's too relevant.
Okay.
The guys in my band are bigger Beatles fans than I am. Mm-hmm. And they've watched the Beatles movies. And in one of them, it sounds like Ringo gets a cursed amulet, like, or a cursed ring he can't take off. And I was like, yay. Whoa, maybe I got to watch those. I don't know if it's just stuck because, like, me finger, you know, or whatever, but, like, if it's literally he just can't take the ring off and they come after him, that's some Blood on the Sand shit. Like, that sounds awesome.
I want to give it to you. I do.
I want to give it to you, but I can't. Like, if that's what happens, I got to look up the plot to Beatles movies. I did not realize they might have cursed jewelry in them.
Cursed objects. Yeah. It's like the cursed statue in that Brady Bunch episode.
Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of in the water at the time.
Yeah.
The drunk guy, because this guy insults him, you know, mm-hmm. The drunk guy is like, okay, you know, I'm taking this money from the wallet. And Jimmy goes dibs on the watch.
Yeah.
And starts kind of bad acting, you know, not mm-hmm. saying what kind of watch it is, you know, until the guy's like, hey man, don't be greedy. Let me see it. Mm-hmm. Grabs. He's like, oh, this is a Rolex. It's a Rolex.
It is a Rolex. It looks it like a Rolex.
They fought the He-Man. It's a Rolex. You know, not cool to be greedy. And Jimmy's still playing dumb.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I was like, yeah, that can't be worth much. You know, and it's like, okay, well, how about this? That you know that is not worth more. You know, it's uneven, right? That is yeah. not worth $1,000. This is an uneven exchange. So it's like, well, just give me whatever you have. So the guy throws in an extra $500, yeah. you know, and you know, walks off, saying, "Later, sucker," thinking he got the better end of the deal.
Everybody carries a lot of cash around with them in Chicago at night. I can tell you that's true from growing up near there.
Oh man, walking pinatas.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The idea here, obviously, you know, this is an old aphorism, but true, you cannot scam an honest person, right? This guy thinks he's getting the scam on Jimmy, and that's how you scam mm-hmm. people and yeah. how you flam them. Jimmy's staying there, you know, in the aftermath of this, and Marco gets up. Uh-huh. He gets up behind him in a way that looks kind of scary.
He gets up like Freddy.
I love it. It's really yeah. good. But then they high five and we see what they, you know, what they did. They got $500 for nothing. They check their drawer. They have six fake Rolex watches left.
Yep. You know? And they're in this shitty basement apartment, you know, just kind of debriefing. You know, Jimmy yeah. lights up a bong and Marco really fucking loves Jimmy.
Yeah.
Like just admires his work. Touching. He's like, God, even just to be around you, man.
Yeah, you are the ultimate, you know, scam artist. And Jimmy dismisses this. This is just good for beer money, that's all. We mm-hmm. know this is ultimately how he's going to make his millions.
Yes.
Doing this kind of shit. This is the first time we've seen Slippin' Jimmy.
Right.
Yeah. We cut over to back to real life in the immediate aftermath of the last episode with Jimmy and the Kettlemans. And Jimmy says, hey, you know, this little stunt of yours, like, they're arguing, they're saying, hey, you could just pretend not to have seen it. You know?
Yes.
And he goes, you know, no, I can't do that. I called your lawyer. Besides that, you know, your little thing has put an innocent man in jail.
Yeah.
You know, innocent man, a working class man, a father, maybe, I think, you know,
just throwing it in. Right. He doesn't know for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Betsy, you know, who is not terribly smart, but smart enough, says yes. like, oh, that must be the guy that we were warned about. You know, like, oh, if the neighbor saw him, you know, that must have been the guy who was coming to get us. And Jimmy has to play dumb about this.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. But hey, you know, let me ask you, like, what is your end game for this? You know, what was your next step? They don't know. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, it's okay. You have maneuverability. You know, you left your house a mess. You went on an impromptu camping trip and you kicked in your front door because it's a free country. Uh-huh. You know, Kim Wexler's good. She'll take care of it.
Yeah.
And Betsy, at this point, I love Betsy Kettleman's, you know, cognitive dissonance mm-hmm. about all of this, being like, no, I mean, we can't go back. We'll have to hand back the money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a bargaining chip. We earn this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these bits of Betsy Kettleman being like, we're not guilty.
No, we're not guilty. Like, this is an exchange. We are taking this because this is a replacement for the wage that I feel my husband is owed.
You want to ask her, like, what do you think you are? You know, what kind of creature are you? You know, and she says, hey, you know, he worked overtime. And just because, you know, just because it's illegal, like lots of things were illegal. Slavery was illegal. Human slavery. And really, you know, just because your salary doesn't mean you deserve overtime. I love specifying it to human slavery.
Yeah. It's a living individual.
A group of living individuals. Yeah.
Yeah. Just because your salary doesn't mean you don't deserve overtime. I'm sorry. That is exactly, that's precisely what it means.
She, you know, compares it to slavery, and Jim goes, yeah, this is exactly like that. And she can't continue to deny this. So she just bends over with a bunch of money and says, come on, you know, don't tell anybody about it. And Jimmy's like, I can't take a bribe. You know, this is the chuck on his shoulder. Yeah. You know, this is the worst thing a lawyer can do. Like, I can't do that. And he says, well, but I can take a retainer. You know, like if I'm a lawyer, like
a $35,000 retainer for a single lawyer.
Love it. You know,
I'll take seven bands, please, for the possibility that I might work with you.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's just like, listen, you know, I would be your number one client. Like HHM is real flashy, but like day, noon or night, like I'd be your man.
Right.
And they both are like, you know, sorry, you know, he says, I love when Jimmy, this happens a few times when he just goes, why not?
It's just, what? To people? Why not? Yeah. Say it to me.
Why not?
Because he knows what they're communicating with their reluctance. Right?
Yes. You know, but he wants them to say it out loud. He's not going to let them off the hook.
Right.
You know? And he's like, you're the kind of lawyer that guilty people hire. You know? And again, like, what the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
You know? But mean. You know? Deterministic.
Yes.
Like, ultimately, Jimmy being treated this way has a hand in him becoming this.
Right. If you're going to do the time, you might as well do the crime. Right?
Yep. She holds out the money and we cut away before we see what he does, which is important and cool.
Yeah. Jimmy pulls up to the courthouse, the parking lot, and tells Mike, like, hey, is it in the papers? They found the Kettlemans and you were right. You know, you'd be surprised. Well, actually, you wouldn't because it was your idea. And he says, like, you assume the criminals are going to be smarter than they are. I don't know. It kind of breaks my heart a little.
Yeah.
Like he's turning this over in his head, right? He's seeing the ways that he could have done this better.
Yeah. And just a future in this kind of thing. You know, he tells Mike, thank you. Mike says, don't mention it. And he says, listen, if you ever need help, Mike closes the window. You know, at this point, he's going to need help in like two episodes.
Yeah.
It's a little silly. The Blowjob Brothers come out with Nacho, or one of the Blowjob Brothers comes out with Nacho. And Jimmy's, you know, gives him the business. Why is my client in handcuffs? He's innocent, you know, and just makes a big show in front of Nacho.
Yeah. And it's like, do you guys draw straws to, you know, see who had to come out here and eat humble pie? You know, just really laying into him. But when he's alone with Nacho, Nacho says, like, camping trip? Really? The night that right after I talk to you, they get a warning and they go on a camping trip. You're a rat. You know, there will be consequences. And Jimmy stands up for himself.
I love this. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because Nacho was no Tuco, right?
Yeah. You know, he says, you know, maybe whoever did that did it to protect the kids. And this doesn't faze Nacho. But then he says, you know, and you got spotted. Yeah. You know, you were sloppy. Like, you did not need help getting in trouble. That blood, like, you can clean that.
It's called Ajax. You know,
Ajax, special formula 409. What are you doing? You know, you should be thanking this good Samaritan because whoever he is, he did you a favor. Yeah. And this works on Nacho. You know, again, Nacho is not Tuco. He's like, fuck, I did kind of fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, Tuco kills everyone who tells him he's a fuck up. Nacho improves.
Yeah. So he just kind of cuts off their business with each other is done.
Yeah. For now.
For now. So Jimmy goes home to the nail salon. And he has this money. He has the, you know, the seven stacks, and he does a Skylar. He starts talking through with his adding machine, like fake receipts for what this could have been for. You know, this is our diamond platinum tier rate.
Yeah. You know, travel, I ate while I was traveling, et cetera.
Yeah.
I hear at the end, he says, you know, upon this rock, I will build my church. Bible quote about starting your empire, basically, you know, like Jesus did. We get this sequence here that is fun once you know what's happening, but a little slow the first time, I feel like. Jimmy's getting tailored for a suit, and we don't really, you know, we don't know that he's doing it. He's not just getting a nice suit.
Yeah, you know, he's very specific about the cut and about the fabrics. You know, I want real mother of pearl, none of that fake plastic crap. You know, you think he's just getting a nice suit because he got a bunch of money. And you know, while he's waiting for the guy to go back and check something, he scopes out some loud shirts and ties. He's like, not yet.
Yeah, the one he's gonna wear. There, back at the nail salon, he's talking to the girls, getting his hair dyed.
Yes.
You know, arguing about which color it is. There's a lot of color humor in this episode, you know, between that. Finds out eventually this is going to be a permanent hair color change. He says, no, just give me the curl, you know, curl iron job. Give me, you know, Tony Curtis and Spartacus.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then we get to see the reveal of what this is.
Right.
Here.
Kim calls Jimmy from her office, saying like, okay, you did me a solid. Do you want to go to dinner? Also, they're showing The Thing, which sign me up. Possible to have a bad day when you're watching The Thing.
Yeah.
But she's interrupted. Howard comes in and he wants to go for a ride.
Yeah. I love seeing Howard on the back foot. He starts off, you know, she's talking about the Kettleman case. She's like, yeah, I think they should hire a publicist. Like, can we do that? And he's distracted. He's like, do you have a minute? Like, there's something in his foot, under his shoe, you know, under his foot. Yeah. He takes her to this billboard and we see it, and it's for JMM Legal Services, where Jimmy is dressed up as a Howard clone.
Yeah.
It's a very funny image.
Yeah. The reveal of it is so good because like he's got like the super white teeth and the hair.
It looks like the Tim and Eric Crimbus special.
It does.
You know, it's really funny.
Yeah. And it's the same logo. It's like the same font, the same kind of treatment, you know, JMM for James Morgan McGill instead of HHM. Yeah.
I love Howard here. I love him being like, he's copying me. Right? Like, that's me. That's our logo.
Such a schoolyard thing.
And Kim, you know, he's like, you're friends with him, right? And Kim's like, well, you know, it's like, you talk to him though.
He called you.
He called you. This isn't the third degree. Just what is he thinking? You know, like they're lawyers. They know that this won't stand.
Right.
But he's playing, you know, 12th dimensional chess.
Right.
Here. He knows he's going to have to take down the billboard. He has plans for doing that.
Yes. No. So Kim goes over to the nail salon and they make some small talk about the perks of salon living, which sounds like a fucking nightmare.
they're in one of these massage chairs. I don't know if you've ever seen, they have ones in the mall.
Yeah, like the dollar massage chair. Almost surely covered with lice. Yeah.
It's covered in lice and then also is fucking brutal. Mm-hmm. I tried that and the huge metal arms just like crushing your organs.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like a simulator of being in the power loader from Alien on the other side of it. Like it feels like being power loaded. It sucks so bad. This one, Ketter. I can imagine this being nicer, but you know.
Yeah. But she breaks out a little envelope. She has brought a cease and desist from Howard, you know, and starts running down. Like she asks, like, hey, what's your angle here? You know,
I love this exchange. She says, you know, you're making this personal. And he starts off telling a kind of the truth where he's like, it's not personal because it's not. This is a scheme. This is a scheme.
Yeah.
You know, but she eventually he says, you know, this is a declaration of war. You're better than this. And then he's like, yeah, this plan isn't just to hurt Howard, but like, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
You know, he said I couldn't use my own name. You're still with him, which causes me a lot of problems. Like, I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, you're better than this. Like, you don't have to be with that schmuck. Like, you be with somebody who cares about you. After this, like
starting this long running thing about Jimmy's conflation of a professional relationship with somebody with a personal relationship with them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Jimmy wants nothing more than to work with Kim, wants nothing more than to work with Chuck. This is the way he attaches to people.
Yes, very much so. You know, they're at this, you know, uneasy kind of stance, and she leaves.
Yeah.
You know, Kim leaves. We get to the trademark ruling. You know, this is kind of perfunctory. This just has to happen, but it's a funny scene.
It is.
Here. He's dressed up as Howard. Well, Howard's there. He brought the suit.
Yeah, know? Which is, I would not do that in front of a judge.
It's very funny. And he's playing very innocent, you know, yeah. Like, oh, you know, what is he? There's only so many fonts out there, things like that. And Howard's making the argument that is like a slam dunk. You know, Jimmy knows he's going to lose. Like, it's yeah. our font that we've used for 12 years. It's using our trademark Hamlindigo blue. And I love Bob Odenkirk's performance, the amount of time it takes for this to land. Uh-huh. Like, he did not know that. That's what it's called. I genuinely think this was new information to Jimmy.
Hamlindigo blue. I love it.
It's very funny. It's like, yeah, that is yikes. And Howard goes, you know, yikes from the man who's dressed exactly like me. Uh-huh. You know, this is a farce. And he says, hey, you know, he's saying I can't even use my own name. And the judge says, no, you can practice on your own name. This isn't about that. Mm-hmm. Wise up, though. You have 48 hours to take out down the billboard.
Right.
You're clearly in the wrong.
Mm-hmm. And so he moves on to the next part of the scheme, which is he's mm-hmm. in the courthouse lobby on his cell phone, shopping around a local media, you know, trying to say like, hey, don't you want to be the people who take down big law?
Yep. You know, it'll just be like taking down big tobacco. Uh-huh. You know, and a little montage, he's calling different places. He's trying to, it would make no sense for him to film the thing.
Right.
That's going to come up. Mm-hmm. You know, until eventually he sees a woman in a UNM shirt. And he goes, mm-hmm. okay, I'll get some college kids. They'll do anything.
I know where I can get some cheap, shoddy labor. Yeah.
College kids. Yeah. So in the parking lot of where the billboard is, the shitty AV clubs, there's a lot of going back and forth. And he has to kind of take over a lot, getting mm-hmm. the shot he wants. This is going to be a thing whenever he works with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just kind of basically does it. He just needs the equipment.
This is precisely. I've had this interaction so many times.
Yeah. It's like a known trope. Like, you just need the equipment. That's why a lot of people even go into the field. Like, they don't feel like, you know, they're not there to learn. They're there mm-hmm. to get access.
Yes. It's just like, hey, you need to get the billboard in. You know, there's some points at the billboard. Oh, you need to get me too. Points at him.
Listen, I'm going to take a look. You know, widens. It's a lot of business.
Yeah.
You know, kind of going back and forth. He starts giving his sob story to the camera. You know, and mm-hmm. I love this is very funny. Like most Americans, I'm a self-made man.
Yep.
you know,
So he didn't talk about it until today. And there you can kind of see in the background, there's a guy in the process of taking down the billboard. And the guy falls and he's dangling by his safety line. You know, and our camera guy, Joey, like, the worker guy.
The dude. He calls 911. Uh-huh. And they, Jimmy, you know, this is all part of the plan. He takes off his jacket, rushes up the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And Joey films him because of course you would.
I was like, somebody might die. Of course, I'm going to point the camera at him.
Yeah. Jimmy gets up there. It takes him a little bit. You know, the worker's yelling at him here and eventually gets there, grabs his hand and pulls him up. And a crowd is gathering to watch, even people on the highway.
Yes.
They're stopped to see this.
Pulling off to see. You see somebody dangling from a billboard. That's, you know. I got to get a look at that. Somebody might die. Yeah. And once the guy's up and safe, they kind of do like a little high five. You know, you okay? Yeah, it took you long enough. This is one of Jimmy's clients. We see him briefly in Miho.
They're in cahoots.
Uh-huh.
We cut to HHM where all the lawyers are watching Jimmy give an interview about it. Just giving, mm-hmm. you know, platitudes. This is all anyone wants is help when they're in need. Things like that.
And the billboard's in the background of the shot with his number.
It's great. You know, with his number. And of course, everyone's interested in this. He used to work there. You know, like, imagine like an old coworker did this kind mm-hmm. of thing. Everyone watch it. Yeah. Everyone is impressed by it except for Howard, who comes in and goes, this is obviously fake. It's a stunt. Who's going to buy this? You know?
Starting up a long-running thing, people are going to be right about Jimmy, but it doesn't matter.
No. Yeah. Howard being right about Jimmy basically the whole time.
Yep. You know?
he asked Kim, you know, do you think anyone will believe this? And she goes, well, you know, people love a hero. And Howard, you know, gives a harumph and leaves.
Yeah. And before we cut away, you know, Kim is just kind of watching. And then Ray Seahorn, somebody commented to correct the pronunciation. I guess she says it Ray, just kind of gives like a smile, like a sly little kind of like smirk at watching this. This is something that she did because she decided that Kim likes this about Jimmy.
Yeah.
And that is why, that is why they ended up taking the character the way they did.
She may call it Ray, but I'm going to keep calling her Rahia. that's not true.
I need to have, it needs to have as many syllables as possible.
Rahia. Yeah. back in the office, Jimmy does his little hand gesture on the phone to see if he has messages, and he has 7. We're going to see the results. These messages are also not good.
Right.
You know, in this, it's very funny. But the, you know, even the stunt doesn't work for no particular reason. Just, the fact that he only grabs Yahoos, it's very funny. You'll talk about this next episode, but like, I don't know, that feels unlikely. The 3 separate Yahoos. I mean, 1 separate Yahoo, but 7 separate Yahoos in the same span of time.
You know? Yeah. No real good leads. I mean, yeah. One of them would have been a good lead if Jimmy could have bit his tongue.
Yeah. So we cut over to the next morning. Jimmy goes to Chuck's place, looks at the paper. He's on the front page. Starts rehearsing a way to talk Chuck down from this. He knows what Chuck's going to think. That's a showmanship. And he eventually gives up.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to work on him. Puts the paper into his car and grabs his deliveries. This starts a thing with Jimmy where he is very good at scamming people who he loves or people who he does not love. Like, he can do it to strangers and people he dislikes. This is going to change.
Yes.
Over time, when Chuck breaks his heart, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and then he's going to be able to perform the ultimate scam and flam on him. And, you know, the big episode of the show everyone remembers, like Chikari, where he is going to do something horrible that ends up resulting in Chuck dying indirectly because Chuck breaks his heart.
Yes.
You know, right now, he still cares about what Chuck thinks about him. He cannot actually turn it on for Chuck. And this is going to lead to Chuck finding out as he heads inside. You know, talking about he has a busy morning, he has to keep going. And Chuck says, you know, that's great. You know, what do you owe this to? And he goes, oh, you know, your advice. So the worm has turned, just clean living.
Yeah. You know, I love the clean living.
The clean living and vitamin pills. And Chuck does not buy this for a second. He cannot turn it on with Chuck the same way he can with other people. Like Chuck can see through him.
The juice doesn't work, you know, and he just kind of keeps getting vaguer and vaguer, right?
Yep.
You know, and all Chuck has to assume is like, okay, well, he's not getting the leads, right?
Yep.
He's, you know, just he has no reason to believe. Wait a minute, did you fake a billboard disaster?
But there's another suspicious element. He notices that the Albuquerque Journal's not there. And Jimmy does a really bad job of drawing attention away from this. He's like, where's the journal? And he goes, here's the Wall Street Journal. So not that journal, you idiot. You know, he's like, yeah, plenty of things to read. It just didn't show up.
Yeah.
Some kids might have taken it. And Chuck's like, yeah, kids love local print news. You know, that's silly. He doesn't have a way out of this.
No.
He can't run his game on Chuck.
He can't. You know? And Chuck doesn't let anything slide.
Nope. Because Chuck is a monster. So he looks outside. He sees other people have their newspapers.
Yeah.
And he's got to make a run outside. This is apparently very hard for him. He puts on the space blanket to grab it. And we get to see, I like it in the notes here, you have his Chuck vision. Yeah. This series of audio and visual distortions to try to simulate what electromagnetic hypersensitivity might feel like.
Yeah, for a brief moment, whenever Chuck is doing something where he perceives himself as being
Slender Man is there. Whenever he feels like he's doing something, Slender Man shows up to fuck with the camera.
Yeah. It briefly is like shot like Jigsaw. shot like the end of a Saw movie, right? Or he's in one of the traps. Like there's
he's
all
in
kinds
the credits
of, like,
of 7.
lots of harsh noises and distortion. You know, camera pointed kind of like directly up at his face.
Yeah. But I love this character bit here. Yeah.
He runs over, he grabs the paper, he puts a $5 bill down, it starts blowing away. He goes back, picks up a rock, and puts the rock on top of it.
Yeah. He's got to pay her for it.
Yeah.
And this is going to have dire consequences next episode.
Yes. But we do get a non-Chuck vision shot from the neighbor who's looking out the window and, you know, sees this. It's, you know, it's quite a sight, you know, because here is this hunched over man covered in a big shiny blanket, you know, just kind of just shuffling across the street in broad daylight.
It's going to be important to have this dichotomy of how Chuck feels it versus how other people feel it once we find out next episode that it's definitively fake. Is that he's just being a fucking weirdo. Mm-hmm. And that him just being a weirdo is what Jimmy's ultimately going to use to bring him down.
Yes.
You know, proving it to everyone, humiliating him, mm-hmm. you know, for basically for faking it this entire time, having a psychosomatic relationship to how jealous he is mm-hmm. basically of Jimmy, you know, this feeling of you were always the favorite. You get away with this stuff, whereas I did on the straight and narrow. Basically, nobody gets free college if I didn't get free college bullshit.
Yeah. Like,
you know, early on.
Yeah. Why like, should... Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, well, early on, like, I'm not trying to equivocate everything Jimmy does to mm-hmm. being victimless or harmless. Here, when we're real small ball, though, it's pretty low stakes. I don't feel like Jimmy is doing anything immoral.
No.
At this point.
But we also... Well, we do know what got him out here. We do know that Chuck is bringing his accurate assessment of Jimmy's mostly flexible morals. Mostly flexible ethics. It becomes morals later on. He is specifically reacting. You know, just it's why should everybody get to. You know, why should he be effortlessly liked by anybody he interacts with? Right.
Yeah.
When, you know, it took I'm a better forever lawyer to get this respect.
Yeah. Like, I'm a better lawyer. I've earned it. You haven't earned it. He doesn't respect the skill that mm-hmm. he has. The thing that Jimmy's able to do, this, you know, as it calls it, loquaciousness, you mm-hmm. know, not everybody has your gift, Mike says earlier. He doesn't respect it. He makes a big show of not respecting it. He's jealous of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back inside, he sees the front page and then curls the space blanket around him more. Again, we've established when Jimmy is up to his shit, it activates Chuck's fake disease.
It's, you know, he was perfectly fine in here earlier. There's no reason for him to clutch the blanket, you know, sensory wise, but he still is feeling it, exposed to it.
Yep. And we're going to, again, they're going to see these consequences both. I love, you know, again, this is the Vince Gilligan's underscore trick thing. The consequences, not just for Jimmy, but for himself, this him doing this and needing not to let anything go, his, you know, act that is positions him as a villain and against our protagonist in the show mm-hmm. is going to hurt him more than it hurts our protagonist
mm-hmm.
Here. And it's going to happen immediately.
Oh yeah.
You know, I love the opening of the next episode. Like, I love how that works. And that's it for this episode.
It is.
Good epo. You know, you have to be cool with the pace of season one, but it is a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
What can people do?
If you're listening to this, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and check out all the stuff we have to offer there. Not just the free shows that we do, but support us. Give us money, mm-hmm. get access to other whole bonus shows. Like us talking about media, you'll love Unfilmable, our show about horror movies. We mentioned
you
The Thing.
Appreciate it.
We mentioned, they talked about The Thing here. We're talking about The Thing tomorrow.
Yeah. We are looking forward to it, and we hope mm-hmm. you are as well. Big thanks to Gwen, our producer, who also mm-hmm. does the music for this show. Thank you, Gwen. Yeah. Big thanks to you if you leave a rating or review. Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, wherever. Until next time, we can't just say don't be Chuck because like that's going to be true all the time.
Yeah.
We never want you to be Chuck. Yeah.
Until next time, go give a college student a job.
Yeah. Yeah. Go hire a college student so they don't have to finish their degree and try to get a job in, you know, officially in whatever that is, AV. Yeah. Just go hire him for this kind of stuff. Get access.